Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
Welcome to another episode of the Rugby Fixation. This week, we're kicking off the very exciting start to the Super Rugby Pacific Tournament by doing our weekly previews of two teams. So we're looking at one team that's based in Australia and one team that's based in New Zealand each week as we get closer and closer to the start of this new and exciting branch of the Super Rugby pyramid, which just keeps changing and growing each year. So hopefully this competition can stick around for a little bit. Very excitingly, joining me to break down the Rebels and Crusaders this week is a co-host that's been sort of lost in the ether for quite a while. Is been busy overseas, but is now back on Australian shores and actually back in Queensland for a very brief time, is Curtis Evans. How you doing?
Going very well. You're calling me the Hooper of the podcasting world. A little sabbatical overseas and coming back to ride the Tars home. So good to be back. Good to be back on home soil and good to be off work for a bit. So a bit more time for podcasting.
I really do need a vouch. This is not the first time that Curtie has referred to himself as Hooper in any walk of life. So this is good. It's par for the course. Don't be alarmed. Don't change your adjust your settings. This is all what we'd expect. And one thing I should actually ask before we dive right into the previews, because we didn't really get to chat much on air about what you thought about the Wallabies in the back end of 2021. Obviously, Hooper was just a absolute freak and strong validation as your favorite player, just as he was ripping up trees for the Wallabies. But what was your very short summation of how the Wallabies went in 2021?
It was exciting from afar when they were playing in Australia. I think obviously the retrospect sort of shows that a lot of home games does help and probably skews the record a little bit, but it was great to get 5 wins in a row. I haven't seen that in a very long time. The spring tour, I thought the game against Japan was pretty disappointing, but it doesn't matter when you win, sort of. And then, rub of the green was no good for the second golfing analogy to kick it off in the first 2 minutes, but it was no good against Scotland or Wales, and we got pumped by England. So if we back to Hooper, I reckon if we get the Scotland and Wales win, he gets World Player of the Year. It was sort of tooth and nail. If anyone else was going to win, it would have been DuPont, and I'm glad it wasn't a Toje or even Revy. So, DuPont very deserving as well. But I think the whole Rennie interview saying that the refs apologise and we should have won the Scotland game hurt a lot. Yeah. And then the Wales game with a lot of calls that went the wrong way and a lot of frustration in the dressing rooms didn't help. And then I was, unfortunately, at the England game, one of very few Wallabies fans doing my best waltzing Matildas, but that didn't help us too much. And then again at the Wales game, but they were a bit better sports after the win. So
I just hearing that takes us back to 2011 when we were at Eden Park watching Wallabies versus Ireland, and Ireland beat us in a pretty boring game in terms of the actual play, but the fan base there for a World Cup just singing Waltzing O'Driscoll the whole night. Definitely sort of rubbed salt into the wound, but it's nice to get that summary. And I'm sure we'll talk more about Wallabies and their configuration in future episodes. But for now, just to give everyone a general lay of the land for these upcoming episodes, there's roughly 6 weeks until the Super Rugby Pacific tournament starts. So what we're going to do is each week rub through two teams, just have a look at what was their record like in 2021. Across both their domestic season and the Trans-Tasman. We're going to be looking at the players that are coming in and out of the squad, focusing on the biggest loss and the biggest gain for their respective sides. There's also going to be a section where we look at the player to look out for. Could be an established player, could be a new mover, could be someone that's probably got a point to prove as we ramp up towards the World Cup. We'll look at the ideal 23. It's not the team that the coach will select necessarily, but the team that we'd both like to see the most, as well as looking at who leaves the biggest hole if there's an injury and the predicted finish in the Super Rugby Pacific competition. So plenty to dive into. We are starting with the Rebels and Crusaders, as mentioned before. I will try and make sure that we've got a few different voices in here, because obviously we've got our own biases and perspectives on these players. But for Rebels and Crusaders, it's nice to start with two that we're pretty neutral about. Obviously, we've got mates that play in the Rebels and Crusaders. It's nice to see them win, but, you know, it's also nice to see a bit of change. So let's start with the Rebels. 2021, they won 3 out of their 13 games, 3 of them coming in the Super Rugby AU and losing all 5 in the Trans-Tasman. They had a bit of an interesting season, probably best summed up by those really close games at the start of the Super Rugby AU tournament. A few missed penalties where Tamua and Hodge, I think, left, 3 penalty goals out on the board, and they lost narrowly to the Reds. Ryan Lonergan kicked a penalty after the hooter to, beat the Rebels when they were versing the Brumbies. And the matches against the Force were close, and both encounters two and one of them, just makes it quite hard. So, Cody, just before we get into players in and out, the Rebels last year, we were sort of indifferent on them. We didn't know where they'd sit. We figured they'd be around that sort of mid-table area. Disappointing year for them?
Yeah, I think so. It's been sort of the story of the Rebels. Other than when they decide to play the Tars, they always play their best foot against the Tars for whatever reason, which is pretty frustrating. But they're always there or thereabouts. And in each game, they're always there or thereabouts. But then their ladder position never really reflects it. So tough for them. They'll have to make a lot of improvements this year. They've got a new coach to do that, but they've also got home games this year, which they haven't had for 2 years, which will go a long way. A lot less travel. You sort of get the benefit of the camaraderie and more time together when you're on the road together, but they've got that now, and the team hasn't changed an awful lot for the core group of players. So they're already probably as close as they're going to be after 2 years on the road. So I think that's sort of any benefit from additional travel and playing out of Victoria is no longer to too much benefit. But they're a real close group. They've got they're a team that'll struggle with injuries if they do get them. But their sort of starting 15 and 23 looks pretty good and can definitely go well.
Yeah, and this is definitely something that came out with the Dave Vessels interview, which has already been released on our podcast platform. But he was pretty adamant that the best 15 was really high quality, but the number of injuries that occurred and the number of turnovers that just happened at really inopportune times, whether it was through that bye that they had around the COVID break, which just saw a lot of players go overseas to try and shore up some sort of contract, it really did leave them with a fairly inexperienced side to get through the rest of 2021 and parts of 2020. So hopefully they can sort of gel now. As you mentioned, the players in and out, we'll go through some of the names. I'll focus on the players coming into the squad first. They're shoring up the front row depth with Effie Mafu, a hooker that's been around a little bit. I think most recently played Super Rugby for the Sunwolves, but it has been around some squads before. I'll skip across to the back row where they've got Tamati Ioane, nice big bop who can play number 8. Moses Robbie comes across from the Reds. Ray Nuu comes across from Otago, who recently did quite well in the NPC. And they get Joe Pincus, a direct replacement for his brother Tom Pincus, who's spent a lot of his time in the Sevens program. The name I left out was their biggest inclusion. Now, I think there's not really an argument for this one, Cody. You probably agree. Matt Phillip. So he comes back from overseas. He's already spent time with the Wallabies. He knows the structures really well. And he's now a 20-test Wallaby. He's really building up his sort of contribution to Australian rugby. His inclusion for the Rebels is massive. There's one other name in the in section there, Curdy. Do you want to go through him and perhaps why he might also be as big an inclusion as Matt Phillip?
Is that Kevin Foote?
That coach? Is, yeah, Footy.
Another South African coach at the Rebels will sort of get those big boppers working hard. I can imagine. I think they've also got a new attack coach as well from memory. So I think it's a pretty exciting setup there. I think first the start of a new coach coming in when there's not a crazy amount of changes is always sort of pretty exciting. You don't know too much what you're going to get, but physical Kevin Foote. He's been at he coached the WA team to win the NRC from memory.
Yeah, and he's been with the Rebels for a few years, and he was at the back in South Africa. He was coaching with Dave Vessels a decade ago with the Ikey Tigers, so he's very ingrained in the systems and formats there. So I think we'll see differences, but I think the players will at least have that sense of comfort and knowledge of knowing exactly who they're dealing with, which is a great thing, I think, to walk into, you know, start of the season.
Yeah.
Looking at the players that are coming out, and this is something that I was glad I was able to, you know, sort of talk to you about, because you'd already spoken to some of the players in the Rebels camp while you were down in Melbourne. And a lot of the names on this list are players that didn't get included in the full-time squad or, you know, contracted squad. When you look at a lot of the names, they're still training with the Rebels. They're still getting some degree of contract. They're just not listed in that initial, I think, 35 or 37-man squad that a lot of the teams choose to name. So some of the names that we call out, bear in mind, they will probably still have some impact on the Rebels this year, especially when injuries occur and, you know, if they really perform during preseason. Some names, however, are some big losses, so we'll cover them. But clearly with this, in the front row, we're losing a decent chunk of players with Isaac Kalia-Ido, Lucio Sodoni, one of the Argentinian players, Albert Anne, who's represented the Reds before as well and has accrued a few caps overseas, and Ed Craig, one of the hookers. So they're still probably going to be in and around at points, but not in the full squad. Joining them in the locks, Ignacio Callas, Steve Cummins, and Michael Isley, who can play locks and back row. He's still training around there as well, so don't be surprised if he's, you know, seen in some of the pictures and whatnot. But the biggest loss in the forwards is Isi Naisirani. So that's one of the big ones there. Curdy, we've probably spoken before about how the Rebels have quite a lot of high-quality back rowers, maybe not that many superstars, but a lot of high-quality back rowers. How big is it going to be losing a genuine superstar in Naisirani?
Yeah, see, Naisirani, he has his good games and his bad games, but his good games are as good as anyone's. And you sort of see whenever there's a big game that comes up, like he seemingly loved the battle between Wilson at the Reds versus Rebels games and always stood up in those games. But yeah, he's 120 kilos. He's a great ball carrier. He's great at controlling the ball at the back of the scrum. Genuine number eight. And when his work rate is up, which can sometimes, you sometimes get a few different Naisiranis, but he's phenomenal. So he'll be a person that the Rebels and Australian rugby is pretty sad to see leave. But in his short time, he made a pretty big impact on, definitely at the force to start off with, came over to the Rebels, made a massive impact and had a great World Cup in Japan as well for the Wallabies and a few other games since. So sad to see him go, but they do still have some great players in that back row. And Michael Wells seems to get players to play everywhere he goes. He was best forward at the Tars and they didn't sign him again. Best forward and players player, I think he got at the Rebels last year as well. So very different number eight, but he's still a very, very good player, smart player, a bit better in the lineout than Naisirani. But yeah, ideally you'd be having them both in your back row.
I think when we get to...
Really step up in Rob Liotta as well.
Yes.
He's another heavy body who is better than I thought in the lineout based on his Wallabies performances. A couple of nice little steals there and getting up more than I thought he would be. So you've got a probably higher work rate back row now, but maybe with a bit less grunt.
I think once we get to the 23 and we have a look at our back row, we'll still see that there's a lot of strength there. It's just... It is interesting when you lose a player of this caliber because he is obviously, you know, at a different level, I think. But looking at the backs that are leaving, Frank Lomani, Theo Strang, two of the halves, they've gone. Louis Holland, Campbell Magne, Glenn Vaihu, so a couple of the centers that have been in and around there. Probably not going to get, you know, much from them. Maybe Campbell Magne comes into the frame just because he's quite a solid 13 option. But the losses here, Dane Haller-Petty, obviously, he's the one that's had to retire under unfortunate circumstances. So he's a massive loss for them, despite not really getting to feature last year. Tom Pincus, as we mentioned before, he's gone. George Worth, I thought he stepped up pretty admirably at fullback. He's still training with the Rebels. So again, he might come into the frame, but he's not in that bulk of the squad. But the biggest loss for them, forwards included, is Marika Corrombetti. Just a sort of heart and soul player for the Rebels. You know, he did have a bit of a try drought, but just you've never seen someone more damaging in terms of what he does, looking for the ball and actually going for work. It's really like a hybrid wing and sort of flanker in terms of how quickly he gets to the rucks, how desperate he is to get the ball, pick and drive, whatever it is to get, whether it's 1 meter or 100 meters that he can run, he's so desperate to get our forward. So he's a massive loss to the team. And as good as the form of Kellaway's been, it's going to be a massive challenge, I think, trying to replace Corin Betty. Now, we've got a few players in there that, you know, we're talking about the ins, we're talking about some of the players in that 23. Before we get to the full 23, Cody, who's someone in the Rebel squad that you're really keen to look at and see how the 2022 season goes?
I think I'm most keen to see, the Wallabies, really. So I'm keen to see how Rob Leota goes, and I'm keen to see how Kellaway goes. Because there's a lot of players that I think are a bit 50-50 here. A lot of it depends on where they get chosen. Like, we don't know where we're going to see Hodge. We don't know where we're going to see Kellaway in their starting lineup. Could be Hodge might be moving to the centres. Kellaway might be right wing or fullback or left wing. It's going to be very interesting to see where they play, but sort of bank on Rob Leota being a six. And I wasn't overly excited by him in Super Rugby season. And then his Wallabies form was better than I thought it was going to be. So I'm keen to see how he goes and see if he brings that added sort of grunt and tries to replace Naisirani as a heavy ball carrier. And also a big defender, tries to hold up defense and slow down the ball, give Wilkin and Hardwick a crack at getting on the ball. And then I'm just interested to see if two seasons or two tours with the Wallabies helps Pone, and if he can then step up and not be a highlight reel, but actually be a good damaging tight head prop that's getting closer to the Alalatoa Tupou level.
Oh, I think that's a massive call with Pone Famasuoli, and I'm glad you brought him up, because we saw this year when Tupou and Alalatoa had injuries in the same week, and we had to, you know, shift James Slipper across. You know, that's fine as a stopgap, but we didn't have anyone else in the squad who has been playing with us or training with us that could have stepped up. Now, Ollie Hoskins did a great job, and I think it's a nice reward for someone that, you know, did put a bit of time in Australia in the force and has been playing very well for London Irish. But it showed a big gap in that, well, we didn't take Harry Johnson Holmes because of COVID. We couldn't access him at the time through New South Wales. Pony Famasuoli was injured, so we didn't get any access to him. Tom Robertson, they didn't really want to experiment on that tight head side, given he'd been playing loose head all year. It does seem like one of those positions where we need someone to step up. So we've very clearly got Tupou and Alalatoa. The force are probably going to be running with Santiago Medrano again, who's obviously ineligible. So it's really a big year for Pony and HJH to try and step up and prove that they're the next one there. So I really endorse that. I think Pony does have to step up. For me,
yeah, if you got told at the start of the year, Slipper, Greg Holmes and Ollie Hoskins are going to be playing tight head Wallabies, you'd be asking some questions.
And that's the thing. Like, it's great to have that top level of talent, but we just need to make sure that the position is getting filled in all the way throughout. For me, the player to look out for is Carter Gordon. I thought he only really got injected into the team for the Trans-Tasman competition, and I thought he did a really good job. Clearly a massive challenge. Those New Zealand teams completely wiped away pretty much every team they played against other than the Force. The Force managed to stay pretty competitive in most of those games. But yeah, the Rebels, they actually look to attack. And the 52-26 loss to the Crusaders, it sounds like a massive, massive loss, but they actually showed a lot of attacking enterprise in that and some good efforts in defense despite the scoreline. So for me, Carter Gordon did ignite a lot of that. And if he can just get a full season with Joe Powell inside him, Matt Tamua outside him, that's a really experienced combination for him to build on, especially as the Wallabies look for another fly half to add to their stocks. So he's someone that I'm pretty keen to see, you know, just get that full season in swing. So let's jump into the best 23. A few positions, I think, are pretty unanimous. Some will be a little, divisive. So we might just go through in little position chunks, like front row, locks and back row, etc., and just see how we stand. Because I think the team does have a few question marks, and I'm keen to see where they sort of play around with. So for the front row, Cameron Orr, Jordan Ulasi, and Pony Famasuoli. I presume no arguments there, Curdy?
No.
And Trevor Hosea and Matt Phillip, they also bring in the locks, and that's a pretty safe bet as well. The back row, I've gone Rob Liotta, Brad Wilkin, and Michael Wells, which I think could be, a bit divisive given Richard Hardwick's also there and has, two Wallabies caps. Josh Kamini had a pretty decent season and is young. What's your back row looking like for the Rebels?
Yeah, I've got the same complete forward pack. So I think that's what we'll probably see at the start of the year, but I also, you expect change with Rebels. They change things for fun. They'll probably put Phillip as a six for a go and put Hayler Petty in the second row. So they'll mix it up, but I think, that's probably as good as they could get to start off with.
I'm glad to see. So this time in England, it's obviously got you a better armchair selector. This is good. I was expecting maybe an out there call. I know for quite a while there was the talk of Ponte Faamasuli reverting back to number 8, just because that's where he started off when he first came to the scene. I'm sure some of the draft rugby boys would love that return, but I think that the forward pack seems pretty settled. Now the halves, I've gone Joe Powell and Carter Gordon. The area where I think there's probably the most room for debate, the centres, Matt Tamua and Stacey Illy is the combination I've gone for. And even as we're talking about that at the start of the episode, we were sort of debating Ray New, who's had a pretty good season for Otago. He could slot in there. Young Tonga Mapaia, he has just done both halves of the Rebels versus Tars trial as the starting 13. And he was the only player that started both halves in the same position. So there is obviously some push to try and get a player of his calibre there. I think Tamua is a constant. He's going to be the 12. Cody, who would you have as the 13?
I'm going to say Young just to be different and because of what we've seen. We haven't seen much of him in play. He's an ex-Bronco. He's not massive, but he seems like he's got some wheels. So I'm just more keen to see it. Illy was pretty decent last year. As we said just before we started, it sort of seems like he's going to be heading to Moana Pacifica next year. He's only on a two-year deal, plays for Samoa, loves that team. I think he'll be definitely going to the World Cup with Samoa. And I think he played in South Auckland before coming over to the Rebels. So he sort of seems like a player that will, if unless the Rebels sort of throw good money at him, he'll probably enjoy going back and playing for sort of a bit, something that means probably a bit more to him. So I'd be keen to see him mix it up, but I'll also be happy to see Illy there. And no, I haven't seen anything of. The question mark will be if Hodge stays uninjured, and then what do they do then?
Yes.
So what do they do if he gets injured? Because he's always the first person to move in any team. But I think starting point, I'd probably keep that same back line. Maybe Illy or Young on the bench. I'd be happy with either of those, either 13 or bench, or Hodge at 13. And a different fullback. George Worth was even good. Yeah. So
Hodge was definitely a consideration at 13, but just, I guess, to tie into that, the outside backs I've gone for were Lockie Anderson at 11, Andrew Kellaway at 14, and Reece Hodge at 15. To me, Lockie Anderson did quite well last year for the Rebels, and he was, a sevens player that came in. I thought he went looking for work pretty well. But there are obviously some other options that could be considered. But for me, Anderson, Kellaway, Hodge looks like a back three that does the job. Is you on the same boat there, Cody?
Yeah, that's first choice. But I just know the Rebels, it won't be the same all season, and there'll be an injury and stuff will get all over the shop. Tamu was also pretty injury prone, and I think the first person to move in would be Hodge to 12.
Yeah.
Because as much as he likes staying in one position, the team seemed to move him around a fair bit.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the sort of the injuries, because the bench actually looks as good as I've seen, and much better than the starting bench they had last year. So if they can keep injuries, this is a pretty solid 23 going forward. They've got the options to have James Hansen as a reserve hooker, Caboose Eloff and Reece Van Neck as the reserve props, Ross Haylett-Petty and Richard Hardwick as the other two reserve forwards, with James Tuttle, Young Tonga Mapaia and Ilakena Vodongo as the three reserve backs. Vodongo is quite big, and seeing some of the pictures in preseason, he looks like he could very easily fit a starting wing role, but I think they'll probably err on the side of caution and go with the experienced Anderson above him, but it's still keen to see how they go. So looking at that 23, who leaves the biggest hole for you if there's an injury? Who's the hardest to replace in this team?
I'd say at the moment Hodge, because he's the person that if anyone gets injured, then it gets a lot harder to sort of cover people. And he's been around with the Rebels for so long, he'll be the leader in their back line, probably calling most of the shots along with Tamua. But I think he's got that versatility where you sort of always want him around. And he was in, like, against the Australian Super Rugby teams, he always plays very well, especially when he's given a bit more space at fullback. He's got a great kicking game. And I would imagine he'd be kicking a goal at the start of the year. So you don't want to lose your kicker too early. And Timur's strike rate with the ball wasn't crash hot last year.
I saw Carter Gordon doing a few kicks at goal down at the was it Noosa Dolphins? It was while he was up in Queensland getting his practice in. So, you know, he might take the reins straight away, which would be a big play for a young man. But no, I think that's a fair call. He is the Mr. Fix-It. So if he goes down, as we saw happened at the end of the Force match where he missed a drop goal, got tackled by Anstey, him being out for the rest of the season did really set the Rebels back a bit. They did lack that sort of consistency. For me, I know he's sort of, you know, only just back into the team, but the biggest hole for me is Matt Phillip. I think he is such an experienced player. And in a tight five that is, you know, promising, but not very experienced, I think he just proves such a vital cog for them. I think he's going to make such a difference for them. If he were to get injured, suddenly the locks go from Jose and Phillip to Jose and maybe Haylett Petty, or they can bring in Isley, or maybe even Leota shifts back in there. To me, that's just a step down. So I think Phillip, if they can keep him healthy all year, that really sets up a pretty strong set piece. Finally, the prediction. So we've got 12 teams in the comp. The 5 from New Zealand, 5 from Australia, and of course, Moana Pacifica and Fiji and Trua. So 12 teams making up the comp. For me, I know it's early doors. We haven't seen the trials. I've got to put the Rebels at 11th. Only because we saw Trans-Tasman, we saw how we fared against New Zealand teams. We can pretty much assume that we'll finish below all 5 New Zealand teams for the Rebels. But I think for me as well, the team looks pretty good. But with, you know, 14 rounds, that's a lot of time for injury. And this team doesn't have the depth as some of the other Australian teams. And I also don't know if it has the excitement of some of the newer teams. I think it's going to be a really tough effort for them to finish in the top 8 and make the finals. I mean, if they got 9th or 10th, that wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't be the end of the world. But for me, I'm just seeing enough from other teams that they've got to go in 11th for me. Cody, does that differ much for you?
I'm probably leaning towards 9th or 10th for the Rebels. I think they'll edge Drua and Force. They had a lot of close battles with the Force last year. You got to also remember that, like, in those super close games, the home ground advantage probably carries a bit more weight. So they had a lot of those last year. I can easily see them beating the Reds once, the Tars once or twice, the Force once or twice, and then probably the Drua once or twice. And Moana Pacific is a bit of a lottery, because they got some pretty good signings, but they never played together. So I'd say at the moment, probably edging for Pacifica and Drua to get into that 9th, 10th area.
I can't really argue with that, because I do think they're sort of in that category of just shy of the top 8, or maybe just flirting with 8th position. So I don't mean to offend any Rebels fans listening when I say 11th, but I do think it's going to be a bit of a challenge if injuries occur, which it seems to always happen with this team. So, yeah, we will see how we go. But
that's also assuming Tars come first.
Yeah, that is, yeah. Well,
they're going to look at.
I think the Waratahs are going to see what a massive difference just having Michael Hooper in the team makes. Which is stupid to say, because Carlo Tozzano was one of their best players last year, but Hooper's just a freak. I think the leadership he brings on field and what he can actually do ball in hand is just stupid. So anyway, we won't spoil where we put Waratahs. Stick around to see if we actually put them at first. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Let's jump from the Rebels to the Crusaders. Crusaders have a absolute lottery, I guess, just in the sense that they can pick anyone out of their development squad and they're a freak. Just straight out the gates. They've got these secret weapons that no one's heard of, but they, you know, they play a game and someone gets injured and it turns out, you know, they're already All Blacks material. So it doesn't look like it's much different this year. The Crusaders have actually done some overseas recruiting, which is quite big. But, you know, for a team that's been so successful for the last 5 years, I think they've picked up a trophy every year for the last 5 years. They're just so hard to beat. Last year, they won 12 of their 14 matches. Ridiculous numbers, especially when they had diverse New Zealand teams and, you know, the vast majority of them. But so 12 wins from 14, really good effort from them. Cody, the big news, I guess, out of the Crusaders is that they didn't win the Trans-Tasman comp. Do you think that's something that they're looking at as a point to prove for the Super Rugby Pacific?
I think they just hate whenever they lose a game. They're not too used to it. So they, they'll be cut about that. They did play very well in all of their games, though.
Yeah.
I don't think they had, they just got outplayed, which I think you'd sort of go, okay, well, we are beatable. You'd sort of accept those, their two losses. But it probably is more motivating for them to have losses as well. And the blue side that they lost to is better this year than it was last year. So it's not sort of like, oh, well, Blues have lost heaps of players and we've gained a few and we've got one of the best back rowers in the world now to complement our already very strong back row. So they're going to be unreal. And they've got breakthrough player of the year in their backs. And if he left, they'd probably find the next breakthrough player of the year as well. So it's pretty ridiculous, their team. And it is going to be a tough year, I think, for anyone that versus the Crusaders.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well. So looking at the actual players that have come in and out of the team, players coming in, they've picked up quite a few players from the Canterbury club because they got a fair bit of game time and, you know, some bits of I didn't think it was a great season for them, but some bits of good interplay for Canterbury. So they picked up Finlay Brewis, one of the props, Shiloh Klein, the hooker, Zach Gallagher, one of the locks, and then two of the back rowers from Canterbury, Dom Gardner and Corey Kello. No real big names there. Dom Gardner had an article come out because I think his dad is involved in the management of Crusaders, and they made it very clear it wasn't a political pick, that he really had to earn it and that he wasn't involved in the selection. But I mean, should be interesting to see those five sort of coming into the play. But really, out of the forwards, the big gain, you just touched on it before, Pablo Matera. That is just an absolute joke that they're getting someone of his caliber in an already good team. Like, their back row already has three superstar players, two All Blacks, one player who's making more tackles than anyone. He was, you know, the Michael Hooper of the competition last year, and they're adding the best Argentinian player that's currently playing. It's
the player that nearly beat them in the 2018 final.
Yeah, exactly. The player that helped beat them as the All Blacks in 2020. You know, like, this is just a superstar player. So Pablo Matera coming in, it just is an absolute embarrassment of riches. So that's going to be very interesting to see where he fits. I think when we get to picking our 23, we'll get to see where we sort of place him. But let's just assume that's the biggest in they're going to get. We haven't touched the backs yet, and there are some interesting backs, but he's the biggest signing they've got. For the backs, he's the
biggest signing in the comp.
Yeah, I don't think there's any argument in that. He's just such a big name player. For the backs, they did get three backs in, and three pretty important ones, I think. The first one is Te Toroa Tahuriarangi, the Chiefs scrum half. So he's come across and he's, you know, got a few All Blacks caps. He was seen as sort of the next big thing. And I think probably just got stuck behind Brad Weber, had an injury as well that didn't help, and just needs to look to reestablish himself. The Crusaders are a pretty good team to do that, because while Bryn Hall and Mitch Drummond have, you know, a mortgage on the jerseys and have done for Drummond for nearly a decade, for Bryn Hall, who came across from the Blues probably 6 years ago. I think this is a smart call, just in the sense that this is probably the only team that doesn't have an All Black scrum half in there. And so if he thinks that he can, you know, try and overtake these two, it's not going to be easy to do, but this is probably a smart move for him professionally. Joining him, Simon Hickey, you know, a bit of a battler. He was supposed to play for the Hurricanes last year, got injured in the preseason, so never did. He's just going to join the team to try and replace Brett Cameron, who's gone overseas, but also Richie Mwanga, who might have a bit of a rest at the start of the season. So expect to see him sort of contending with Fergus Burke at fly half, maybe for the first few games. And then Kenny Nahola. So the surname will be you know, pretty familiar for most rugby fans, but Kenny is the even bigger brother of Waisaki, who you know, was playing a bit at the Chiefs, I think, didn't get much game time, but was tearing up trees in the NPC this year. So again, the Crusaders just keep signing superstar after superstar. Don't even know where they're going to fit these guys in. But I think we can cut to the outs because we both agree Matera is the biggest gain there.
Yeah, definitely. And starting with the outs, I think you can sort of say as much as Kinney's a great grab, they did lose Mataielli.
Yeah.
So that's at least they don't have both of those and less defying Ganuku not in their starting team.
Well, this is the biggest joke. Kenny Naholo would start for most Aussie super sides, if not all, but he's not even going to make the bench for the Crusaders. Mm. Like, it's just an embarrassment of riches. Actually, I take that back. He wouldn't start for the Reds.
Prove it.
Just waiting for a reaction. With the outs, I'm going to leave the first name off the list just for the time being because he's probably the biggest out, in my opinion. But the Crusaders are going to be losing Isi Tuangafasi, Andrew Makalio, Luke Romano, Fetu Douglas, Tom Sanders, Arian Nari, Brett Cameron, Rennie Ranger, Manasa Mataielli, and Josh Mackay. So some pretty big names, a few players that have, you know, accrued a fair few caps for the Crusaders. Luke Romano's big just in terms of the experience he brings, but Crusaders have so many locks, so they're not really going to feel that loss. Fetu Douglas, he's, you know, a pretty consistent workhorse, but as we've touched on, the back rollers are just so you know, dangerous that if they lose another dangerous one, it's not really the end of the world. To me, the name we left off and who will end up being the biggest loss to this team is Michael Alalatoa. So he's been their, you know, best tight head prop for the better part of the last two or three seasons. He's, you know, was the understudy to Franks. He spent a lot of time at the Crusaders just sort of applying his trade and has really turned himself into a damaging scrummager and, you know, ball player for Crusaders and for Samoa. But I think his loss is going to be the hardest dealt with just because the Crusaders have two loose head All Blacks, but no tight heads. So how they sort of fill that hole, we've got a good idea of which players it'll be, but it's definitely a drop down in caliber. I presume that's similar for you, Cody. Is there anyone else on that list that's a notable loss?
Yeah, I'd say he's the biggest loss. I think as much as he was on the way out, I think it's sort of sad to see Luke Romano go because he was such a good player for the Crusaders, and he was one of the people that didn't matter if they were down at the 50th or 55th minute, he's one of the people that they bring on and then sort of extends the lead a lot further. Or we'll make a couple of big runs or big tackles and just be good to watch. So I'll miss seeing him play, but yeah, his impact with Strange on the bench behind the Crusaders captain and the All Blacks captain is sort of going to be.
Again, this team, like, it sounds like a joke when you describe him, but it's just so stacked. Let's breeze over the player to look out for, because I think we're both keen to see Matera play and just whoever the name in the 23 we're keen to see play. In the 23, I'm predicting they have a Joe Moody, Cody Taylor, and Ollie Yeager front row. Nods from Cody with a Sam Whitelock and Scott Barrett lock partnership. Again, no surprises there. Back row, again, probably the point of contention. I've got Ethan Blackadder at 6, Pablo Matera at 7, Cullen Grace at 8. You could nearly switch any of these guys around. I think there's probably a lot of calls for Matera to wear 6 and Blackadder 7, which, you know, makes sense. I know Matera wears 6 for Argentina, despite, you know, they have a slightly different play on the blind side, open side role. And then for people that have been paying attention to the What a Lad podcast, The Ethan Blackadder basketball singlet is the second most sold out jersey, and that's the number 7 jersey. So there's that as well. But for me, any combination of Blackadder, Matera, and Cullen Grace is pretty imposing.
How does anyone make a line break against them?
Yeah. Let alone for a line. I've got no clue. The team is so good. And keep in mind, as we mentioned before, Tom Christie, the most tackles in the comp, he would be the person coming off the bench in this scenario. It's just disgusting. Like, it's just so imposing seeing this group of players listed here. In the halves, I've gone for Bryn Hall and Richard Mwanga. I think their partnership is pretty vital. Cody, do you have any changes to that?
I continue to think that Bryn Hall isn't a good player, but he's very good for the team. He is exactly what they need. And I think Triple T would overplay his hand a bit too much. So Triple T would go Augustin Pulu on the Blues, I think, at the Crusaders, which is not what they'd want. But I'd be keen to see Triple T get some decent game time. And I've always preferred Drummond over Hall.
Yeah.
So I think they've got three options that are all relatively equal now. But knowing the Crusaders, the formula that works is Hall plays and he does whatever Mwanga tells him to do. So.
Yeah. Seems to work out pretty well. Yeah. The centers, I've gone for Havili and Goodhue. This one was interesting because this combination was sort of forced because of injuries to Enor and then injuries to Goodhue, and Havili ended up just playing 12 for the All Blacks. They could go any number of ways because Fainga and Nuku also played a bit of time at 13 as well, and there's so many good outside back options. But Havili and Goodhue does seem like the most experienced and safest combination. Would you go the same?
Yeah, and again, my line break question remains the same because you're not going to get one in the midfield unless you throw Kenny Naholo, who's also on that team.
Yeah.
Down to Billy. Because Goodhue doesn't miss one-on-one tackles. It'll be you better attack the Mwanga Havili channel if you're standing a chance.
Yeah. And even then, if you turn the ball over somehow, you've just given away a try. So it's just
32.
Yeah. All right, so we've got those guys there. The outside backs, George Bridge, Sever Reese, and Will Jordan. Again, this is a team littered with All Blacks. It's disgusting saying that out loud because I think last year they might have all ranked in the top 8 fantasy picks. You know, like these are guys that, you know, we're trying to get very early doors. It just, yeah, crazy to see guys of that caliber just sort of go through. So that is a stacked team. If we go to the bench, we've got Brody McAllister at hooker, George Bauer and Fletcher Newell in the reserve props, Quinton Strange and Tom Christie on the bench as the other forwards with Tahu Rearangi, Braden Enor, and Lester Fainga-Nuku as a reserve backs. It's just disgusting.
Where you attack them is in the second half scrum, evidently.
Yeah.
And then these still got the two of the best locks in the world pushing behind. I don't know. It's a bit ridiculous. But that's where you go Brumbies v Crusaders, second half scrum. Let's just kick some penalty goals and do our best.
Yeah. I mean, the game plan to beat the Crusaders is so elusive just because, you know, no one really seems to manage it. I'm very keen to see what teams try and come up with this year because that is a very imposing side. I think you're right. Scrum still seems like the one area just that they can target that tight head side with, you know, a less experienced option, but still you've got 4 All Blacks and an Argentinian pushing behind you. So you'll probably be all right. For us, who do you think leaves the biggest hole if injured in this team?
See, it's tough because Mwanga.
Okay.
Mwanga.
Yep.
Because none of their other, they don't do the whole Aussie thing where you can play 13 or 15 and you can then get thrown into 10 and good luck. Mm. I don't know, we don't even have another 10 in the bench 20 in the best 23. So then you're looking at what's his name? Sam Hickey or Fergus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Who were both very unexciting, but I guess if you can just play make But then if you've got an unexciting 9 and 10, if Hall stays, then you're probably not looking like the same Crusaders.
Mm.
So I'd say Mwanga. And then if they lose any tight head prop, Jaeger I thought was pretty decent last year. So maybe also throw him in.
The only reason I didn't list Mwanga is because I know the times I've rested him before, you could shift Havili into fly half where he does a pretty good job and you have a center combo of good human animal, which somehow seems nearly as dangerous. So I agree they don't have a natural 10 that's anywhere near as good as Mwanga, but I think they can sort of plug a hole for a short term. For me, it's Cody Taylor. And the reason why it's Cody Taylor is because they also lost Andrew Makaleo. I think him going to the Highlanders is just a big loss because he's a pretty damaging runner. If they were to also lose Cody Taylor, who I think is, you know, the best hooker in world rugby, I think that's a massive dent to the side and, you know, someone that's just so damaging. He scored the only try that, you know, final between them and the Jaguares. He's just someone that is everywhere and just, you know, always plays well. I think he's nearly that Hooper sort of player where even his bad game, it's just because he didn't seem to do much, but it was probably still a 6 or 7 out of 10. Like he doesn't have bad games. So to me, he's their biggest you know, hole if he gets injured. But you know, he's hoping he doesn't, because we do want to see the good teams playing well.
When was his last injury? Just trying to think of it.
I don't know.
He seems to have gotten away pretty scot-free so far.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because I think Dane Coles is borne a lot of the injuries for the hooking role for New Zealand. So I think Cody Taylor's remained pretty good throughout. Again, this is not an intentional jinx. We're not trying to, you know, put it into the universe, especially if one of us end up drafting him, which is probably a good segue to go to the top three draft picks for each team. So we didn't do it for the Rebels just yet. We're going to do them together at the end. To make sure that, you know, that people are looking for those fantasy tidbits, they've really got to earn it. You've got to stick around to the hour mark and make sure you hear who we're backing. Because, Cody, I don't know if you've had much of a chance to brag about it, but you were actually a finalist and, I think, winner for the draft comp last year. Is that right?
Yeah, most points ever in a fantasy season. So, minor premiership winner, dominated the final by 150 points, I think. So
Hate.
Wasn't too tough of a season, really. I think it was 800 points more than the second in the minor. So
there's
all fun of it. They're all just numbers that I just remembered off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, this has sort of like a North Korean revisionist history of it. Just like, oh yeah, no, don't worry, the team did really well in the Olympics, don't worry. Yeah.
It's got a handicap of plus 27.
Yeah. I will say did do well to win that from abroad. I think maybe having less time around, you know, all of us just sort of talking shit and, you know, probably drinking during the games helped, you know, weren't as beleaguered during that. But for us in that Rebels team, I'll sort of scroll it down, have a bit of a look at some of the players in there. Who are three players in that side who you think they're going to go relatively early in that draft?
Kellaway, Phillip, and I would say Powell.
Right. Not bad. I had the same issue as you because I'm just sort of looking at the team like, yeah, there's not many that I'm, you know, jumping to get. One who I think could actually end up being pretty good value is Pony Famasuli. Again, just because of those big runs.
That's a -5 for a penalty.
Then a -4 now. It's been adjusted. Okay. So, yeah, there is definitely that. If he does give away penalties, it's an issue. Carter Gordon could be a sneaky option at 10. He does, you know, have a very nice kicking game, whether that leads to a few try assists, things like that. But yeah, there's not too many options jumping out straight away. So probably best to take it straight to the Crusaders, who, I mean, realistically, I think have probably 5 of the top 10 picks, maybe more. Who from this team would be 3 players that need to get drafted early?
hard to put it in order, but Jordan, Mwanga, and Taylor.
Yeah. And look, I can add Dave Havili, George Bridge, and Sevi Reese. And we've named six people, all different, that should go relatively early. Bridge probably on the back end of that.
Scott Barrett will probably be the best lock.
Matera is
probably going to be one of the best back rowers.
We haven't mentioned Matera. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? So, yeah, just plenty to like around there. And, you know, just as one last bonus, you know, well, partially for you, Cody, but also for anyone that's made it this far as well and that is playing their fantasy rugby, keep in mind, Jack Goodhue does have an injury and probably won't play until April. So there's room in that team for Anor or Fanganuku to sneak in. And I'm just saying, if Fanganuku is a starting player, he is a player that you want in your fantasy team.
He can score tries.
I think that sums up pretty well.
And Reese will get rested.
There we go.
Reese will get rested and Fanganuku will play a lot of minutes.
Yeah. I'm really hoping so, because he's a very talented player who I think, again, would be starting in any other team. But I think that does a pretty good job of wrapping us up for our first set of previews. Two teams in the bank, 10 more to go.
Our predicted finish for the Crusaders, worth mentioning?
Nah, I reckon stick around for the other 10 teams to hear which number we've left out, but you won't be surprised to hear that we think they'll finish first. Not much of a change there. Thanks for joining again, Cody. It's nice to have you back on, because it's been a while, I think, between podcast episodes. The listeners don't get to hear all the texts or calls we have during the weeks normally, but good to have recorded evidence of some thoughts, especially for a team that wasn't the Waratahs.
Yeah, good to sneak a few little Tarzan Hooper plugs in, and also thanks for bringing up fantasy, because I better ride that one out while I can. But yeah, very exciting. Not long to go. It was at 50 days the other day that you sent through till round one.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I think round one or two is the Rebels weekend or the Melbourne weekend. So that'll be very interesting. Oh, actually, no, that's off now, isn't it? Because of the change of schedule.
Yeah, change of schedule now. But still, they will try and get that. I think it's now round 11 or something. We can fact check that later. But yeah, it's still very exciting to see this comp getting ahead. As you said, we're now less than 7 weeks away. So very exciting. Countdown is on. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the rugby.